Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Positively Autistic Jeanette's Autism Show. This is a show where I talk about all things autism with a range of guests who have an interest in autism and part of the community, with people with a lived experience, parents, clinicians, professionals, and everyone who fits within all of those or a couple of those. I'm Jeanette Perkis. I live in Canberra in Australia. I have a little black kitty called Mr. Kitty. I work for the public service in my sort of day job, and I'm a very passionate autistic self-advocate. And you've probably come across me before, so I won't go on about it. I'm Positively Autistic, if you haven't met them before, a lovely organisation based in the United Kingdom, and they do work around autism advocacy. They have a Facebook presence, wonderful Facebook page, website, and these radio programmes is one of the things they do. And I will give a lovely shout out to Sarah and Tracy and Joe are Positively Autistic, and then we'll turn to our wonderful guest today. I've actually had this man, Alex Evans, on the program before. This is his second time. He's doing some wonderful work, predominantly in the United Kingdom, but hopefully further afield in the future, around autism and supporting people on the autism spectrum. So welcome to the show, Alex.
Thank you, Jeanette. It's a pleasure to be back again for round two, so hopefully we'll have a lovely interview. I'm looking very much forward to it.
Oh, that's excellent. Me too. So could I get you to tell the readers, I was obviously thinking I was interviewing a book, could you tell the listeners about yourself and your work in the autism community?
Yes, of course, Jeanette. Hi, everyone. My name is Alex Evans, and I was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome at the age of 13. And I guess I struggled to accept my autism until I turned 25. And along the way, I made some very bad choices in life. And at the age of 25, I had an epiphany. I thought autism courses through my veins. That is not going to change. What I can change, however, is my outlook and perception of the world. And as I'm sure you will agree with me, Jeanette, that with positive choices will equal positive outcomes. It's about identifying all the positives. Look at the things we can do. Focus on our strengths rather than things that we might struggle with. I set up my own company a few years ago called Optimism in Autism. I know it's a bit of a tongue twister, and my email address is an absolute nightmare. And then within the community, I do support work one-to-one with a young individual called Rowan. He's 25 and he has atypical autism and moderate learning disabilities. And the work we do has been just tremendous. It's an absolute pleasure to work with him, and he has taught me so much, including patience.
So what was your life like as a teenager?
Okay, well, Jenna, I guess I have mixed emotions about that. Getting diagnosed just 1 week prior before my 13th birthday was definitely a bombshell. And I confided in a school friend that I had autism, but his response was, he called me a freak. Now, I understand now, as I'm now 30, that some people, particularly young folks, are ignorant of what they don't understand. Now, if the response had been more positive, I most likely would have not been so angry and mad at the world with a massive chip on my shoulder. However, like many Aspies, I was blessed with certain talents, and mine was sports. I know that's not very typical, but as the great Dr. Wen Lawson says, if you've met one person with autism, then you've just met one person with autism. And sports for me was my shining light, and it was my saving grace, particularly at school. It won me my respect of my peers and friends alike, and that was phenomenal in helping me build self-esteem and confidence levels.
So what sorts of things were not happening when you were a teenager which you actually needed to happen?
Okay, Jenna, the answer to that would be a severe lack of social groups for others on the spectrum, because at least within those settings, I could feel like I wasn't the only one alone. Being bullied and teased, feeling frustrated, had a devastating effect on my mental health. The therapists I saw as a child didn't really have a clue about autism, and they unwittingly made things worse. So I would say more investment in services for young people, psychological intervention would have been a massive benefit as well.
Did anyone in your life understand you and your needs?
Okay, and there were a couple of people. The first person was my mum. Now, she's my rock, my idol, my inspiration, my everything. She read extensively about Asperger's syndrome, particularly the books from Professor Tony Atwood. And she communicated to my school on how best to support me and my needs. She did help my communication somewhat, particularly when I was quite young, maybe about 8 or 9. She would get me to speak to strangers on the street, just maybe ask, you know, where the local shops were or what the time was, just to sort of get me to communicate with other people. And also as well, my head of year. Again, he didn't really understand autism, but he took an interest and he wanted to learn more. Now, a lot of us Aspies have a very black and white way of viewing the world, so there's barely any grey area. Either it's right or it's wrong, or it's just or it's not fair. And I spent quite a lot of my time in school in detentions, but if I didn't feel it was warranted, then I simply didn't turn up. Now, my head of year, he had a revolutionary idea. It was about address the behaviour, not the child. So his idea was to get me, the teacher who had issued that detention, and himself, sit us round a table and discuss why that behaviour was unacceptable and how it had led to the detention. Now, this gave me an opportunity to put my side of the story across, and it also gave the teacher to put their side of the story across. As we all know, there are two sides to a story. And this helped me to see things from another person's perspective. It wasn't just my way of thinking. There was another opinion as well. Now, sometimes the outcome would be, OK, Alex, I've heard what you've had to say. OK, I understand you've had a meltdown or you're a bit anxious. Let's scratch that detention and we'll start again. Or sometimes it would be a case of, OK, miss, sir, I now understand why my behaviour was unacceptable. OK, I'll go to that detention. So that for me, particularly going to school in the early 2000s, was a revolutionary idea. And it was, it helped me to see things from another person's perspective. So that was instrumental in developing myself.
Well, that's great. So what were the sorts of difficulties you had to get through as a teenager?
Oh, geez. The biggest difficulties for me personally was trying to find my true identity. How to accept that I was on the autism spectrum, and obviously being bullied for being different. I went through quite clinical depression. I survived 2 suicide attempts in my life, and to fight the black dog and win was certainly no mean feat. Mm. Although to this day, I still require some support to keep my mental health stable.
Well, I don't think you're alone there. I know I have some mental health issues as well, and it sort of comes as part of the territory, unfortunately. So what could have been done to help you through your teenage years?
Okay, I would say having a good group of friends that weren't out to try and exploit me would have helped a lot. Good psychology as well, someone that actually understood Asperger's syndrome, who generally cared about me, tried to teach me anxiety management techniques, and also look at controlling my anger would have helped massively.
Definitely. So what sorts of things do teens on the spectrum face more generally, sort of difficulties and things?
Right, I would say for social exclusion, bullying, misunderstanding the intention of others, anger, withdrawal, possible substance abuse, addictive behaviours, for example, computer gaming, as that's a way to detach from reality. Forming relationships, so that if they don't work out, that can lead to isolation. Also mixing with the wrong crowd, which was what happened to me. So that can lead to sometimes exploitation and, again, bullying as well.
And what sorts of things do autistic teens need to help them get through school?
Okay, the most important things I think they need, in my opinion, are trust and respect. If you can set those foundations in place, then you can start to build up their confidence and raise their self-esteem levels. A lot of one-to-one support in the classroom to make sure they understood what's been said to them. Also look at extra time in exams to help them process the questions. Reasonable adjustments, which is in compliance with the Autism Act 2009, which came through the UK Parliament. So a reasonable adjustment in school, for example, if the young person has quite sensory difficulties, if they have a fire alarm drill, maybe just get that person out of the classroom before anyone else. If there are any sudden changes to a person's routine, just have the common courtesy and decency to let them know straight away. The worst thing you can do for an autistic person is keep them in the dark, because that can cause a lot of anxiety levels to be raised. A buddy system as well, particularly when you go through the transition from primary to secondary school. Teachers to really care about the young people they are trying to help, and to give them the tools to help them succeed in life, because the school, you'll spend the vast majority of your life in school, and it's about learning. And teachers, for me, some teachers really embraced me and got the best out of me, and other teachers had preconceived ideas about autism. So I always do, if I do my talk in education, I bring along with me my old year 9 school book from when I was doing the, it was the meetings in there. I'm trying to think what it's called now. Sorry, Jeanette.
That's okay.
That's school report. That's it. Sorry, school report. And the contrast between the two reports was staggering. So if teachers can really identify and get the best out of you, you know, find out what we can do. And it's about building those relationships. So some teachers really helped me a lot. Other teachers just didn't understand how to get the best out of me. So it is important that teachers have training in autism and just don't have any preconceived ideas about us.
Definitely. So do you think that schools are doing a good job of assisting autistic students or not?
That is a good question, Jeanette. The answer to that is it's a pick and mix. It would be awesome if all schools were more autism friendly. The truth is, some are, many aren't. And it really is the roll of the dice whether schools are on board or not. And I think that's predominantly to do with the cuts that have been happening in the UK.
So what more needs to be done by schools, do you think?
Okay, training for both teachers and pupils alike.
Absolutely. Do you think things are improving in this space?
Again, I can see improvements, as I said in the previous answer, Jeanette. It tends to be a postcode lottery. Now, I know that some schools are going through an accreditation course on behalf of the National Autistic Society. Some of these events I have spoken at. I think it does need to be compulsory that every school in the entire world has training on autism.
So do you have any advice that you give to teenagers at the moment who are on the autism spectrum?
Yeah, I would say to them, please don't despair. It can be a tricky time going through puberty and going through schools trying to fit in and blend in. But don't give up. Things do get better for you. When I do the speeches, I aim to leave them with these two statements. One, you don't grow out of autism. Rather, you grow into it. Once you feel 100% comfortable in your skin, then you can start to unlock the potential that's hidden within. And lastly, be a warrior, not a worrier.
I love that. That's fantastic. One thing that you do that is very interesting to me, because not many people do it at the moment, and I think more people need to do work around this, you do some amazing work around autism and criminal justice. Now, just in case anyone of the listeners doesn't know this about me, between the years of ages of 20 and 25, I spent a fair amount of time involved, if you like, in the criminal justice system due to an older boyfriend who was quite exploitative, and I didn't understand sort of what the danger was and all of that kind of thing. I was very naive, and then got involved in all these very poor choices and bad decisions and had addiction problems, and everyone I knew was a criminal, so that was sort of my life. And so I was one of those autistic people who spends their time in prisons and in the criminal justice system, and thankfully I was given the opportunity to sort of escape from that world, literally, and take my place in the more usual world that everyone else inhabits. But it is the thing about autistic people that we do have those issues and those risks around criminal justice involvement, but a lot of people don't want to think that. So do you find that many autistic people do end up involved in the criminal justice system?
I'm sorry to say, Jeanette, the answer is yes. Now, I can't give you an exact figure. I did do a speech up in Wakefield Prison, which is in Yorkshire, and I spoke to the clinical psychologist within the prison, her name was Sally, and she said to me she reckons the figure could be between 11 to 14%. She said it can be higher. The reason for that is a lot of people within the prison system are either misdiagnosed or they are undiagnosed. Mm. Some of the prisons in the UK, they do have screening, but again, because of the cuts, so it depends on which prison you go to. Sally did say to me, Alex, I could probably diagnose 20 prisoners within this establishment right now, but because of funding cuts, you know, we don't really have the tools to do that. But the figures are probably high. But the reason, again, either they've been misdiagnosed or they're undiagnosed.
And sadly, that inappropriate or lack of diagnosis can exacerbate problems that people have anyway in life. And often getting the diagnosis is the time when they start to realise that they can make some changes because they have an identity and they accept themselves. And it's been my case. So what sorts of reasons do autistic people tend to get involved in crime?
Oh, Jeanette, there are so many reasons why. The examples that I could think of top of the head could be theft relating to a special interest, social naivety, so they could be exploited by gang members to be drug runners or maybe carry weapons, assaults on when highly stressed, so that could be assaults on the public, or it could be assault on the police when they're stressed, highly anxious, inappropriate touched, and they could just lash out. Yeah. Computer hacking. I'm sure you've heard of that young man called Gary McKinnon. He had an obsession with aliens, and he actually hacked into the US government FBI files. So he got in some hot water for that. Misunderstandings as well. Very typical. A lot of the talks that I've done, I've found out it's a lot of sexual harassment. So if a person, an autistic person, has got an interest in someone, and the other person's feelings aren't reciprocated, they could become obsessed with that person because they won't take the subtle hint that if the person stops communicating with them, then they're just not interested. So they could bombard them with text, nuisance phone calls, emails, etc. And that does constitute an offence of harassment. Getting into drink and drugs, fighting with the police. A lot of it is what I would call accidental offenders. So my personal example of this, which I gave to a 180 police officers down in London at the City University, happened to me when I was going to the local job centre. Now, during my teenage years, I used to wear a hoodie with a baseball cap. So that wasn't to look, you know, like a bad boy or any of that rubbish. For me, it was for sensory purposes. I liked the sensation on my cranium, and I didn't feel too comfortable with maintaining eye contact. So let me try and set the scene for you and the listeners. I got into the job centre with my hoodie up. Now, there were no signs that you could not wear a hoodie, although the rules had now changed. So I've gone in, I've spoke to the floor manager. I said, look, can I just use your phone to make some inquiries for potential jobs? He said, sure, not a problem. Now, I'm on the phone, and this big security guard has approached me from behind, so it's unexpected, and he's told me flatly, remove your hood. So I've turned to look at him, and I've turned away. I'm trying to concentrate what's been said to me on the phone. Now, not even a minute had passed, Jeanette, when he's come at me again. This time, he's forcibly shook my shoulder and told me to take down my hood. Well, it has all kicked off, and I've just spiralled into a cataclysmic meltdown. And I was actually arrested for that offence. But the irony was, Jeanette, that on the day in question, I hadn't gone out purposefully to commit a crime. I'd gone out to try and look for potential work, and I ended up being arrested. So again, something minor can turn into something major as quickly as that.
Yeah. I think that misunderstandings thing is particularly dangerous, that there's, you know, people have assumptions of why someone's doing something, and it might not be that. And often for an autistic person, they might be doing something that might look suspicious but actually isn't, like in your case. And, it, you know, all those assumptions just lead to all this sort of really escalation of things that don't really need to be escalated. And sadly, we see that quite a lot. So what sort of interventions and assistance to young people on the autism spectrum who might be involved in the criminal justice system need to help them move past that?
I think sometimes the crimes that are committed, they don't really warrant a custodial sentence. I think obviously training is so important in informing people. Preventative measures, my take on it is early intervention is crisis prevention. I did do a speech for a company called Communicords, And they are basically like facilitators. So they will help assist the vulnerable people in the court situation. So they'll act as their advocates and to liaise with them to help facilitate communication. And that's both for the police and the courts. So that's always beneficial as well.
Well, that's good. So what do you do in, with your work around criminal justice and autism? What sorts of things do you do in that space?
Oh, I've undertaken many presentations within the criminal justice system. Most recently, Wakefield Prison, which is, as I said earlier, which is up in Yorkshire. And that was for 120 prison listeners. I've also gone to the House of Commons and I spoke to the all-party parliamentary group at Westminster Communicourt. They're a nationwide organisation to help facilitate communications. And there was 180 police officers from six different forces at the City University of London.
That's really important because that message that you have, and I guess you know, I have that message too, about you know how people can get in trouble for reasons almost beyond their control and how they need support rather than blame and to understand around autism and what does it mean and what kind of behaviours do autistic people do in that situation as a general rule. I think all of those really important things for first responders, for police, for prison staff, for prisoners themselves, for you know anyone working in that space to have an understanding of because often there is, you know, a lack of that. So thank you, you know, on behalf of me and a whole bunch of other people for doing your good work. Now, do you have anything else? We've zipped through the questions. I've run out of questions just about. So I just got, do you have anything else you'd like to talk about?
Geez, there is so much I can still talk about, Jeanette. How are we doing for time?
You've got 9 minutes. Well, it does not exactly. If you go over, that's okay. But 9 minutes is just over half an hour. So...
Okay, I was going to look at maybe effective communications. So if I do, I've got to do another talk next week for a small support group for parents and carers and Aspie kids as well. And what I've said in these talks before is if you've got a special interest or an obsession or a passion, that's fine. Keep hold of that. That's what makes you unique. That's what makes you you. But I say try and be mindful that just because it's your special interest and your passion, it might not be everyone else's. So, for example, with the young man I support, Rowan, his interest is Formula One, so the racing. Now, I'm trying to teach him that it's fine to talk about F1, but maybe not everyone wants to talk about F1 for that duration of time. So I'm trying to get him to maybe look at the newspaper. Now, the newspaper's got lots of different articles. It's a hot topics of conversation. Now, I read the Sun newspaper, so for the listeners in England, you can read into that what you want. Apparently, it's not a very good paper. But with a newspaper, you can use that for effective communication, so you can pluck out different topics that are relevant, that people are talking about right now. So, for example, there was the big thing with Jeremy Clarkson with Top Gear. You know, so, again, use the newspaper to have more effective communication. So, oh, did you hear about this? Do you hear about Wayne Rooney getting paid $300,000 a week? You know, so rather than just have one interest, try and broaden your horizons to different interests and different communications. Again, looking at meltdowns as well, I'm sure you've had meltdowns, I've had meltdowns, when you plunge into that neurological storm. I did a talk for a group called SASE over in Birmingham, and one of the parents said, well, Alex, my son came home one day, and he was just buttering some bread, some toast, and he dropped it on the floor and he just had an absolute meltdown. You know, what? Why was that? And I said, well, that instant there, that was probably the straw that broke the camel's back. It was probably, for me, it's an accumulation of things. So you've gone to school, they're trying to fit in, they might get a bit anxious and they don't want to explode because they don't want to look stupid or look abnormal in school. So they bottle it all up. And when they get home, they're just that one thing. So, for example, dropping the toast, then it's like a house of cards, it all comes tumbling down. So I said, that's the reason for that. But looking at, I think the question that I ask my audience is, can meltdowns be preventable? That's the key question. And in my opinion, Jeanette, I believe the vast majority can be. Early intervention is crisis prevention. If we can identify, are there some triggers that a meltdown's approaching? Is the person becoming jumpy, fidgety, sweaty? Is there a sudden change in behaviour? you know, get them out of that situation, get them somewhere into a quiet room so they can take that stress, decompress. It's, again, if someone's quite irate, and they're particularly if you're dealing with the police or law enforcement, if someone's quite irate and they're there and the police come in at the same level, all you're going to do is bump heads and you're going to get your fingers burned. So my advice is, if someone's quite irate and quite distressed, if someone's up there, start down there. Always remember that calm creates calm. Now, you can use distraction techniques as well. I mean, the way I look at it, can we diffuse the situation simply by talking? I think sometimes we can. I mean, take my chap that I support, Rowan. Now, if he was getting quite stressed or quite anxious, then I would probably use a distraction technique. So I'd get him on his special interest, use that as a thought blocker. So he likes, you know, the Formula One, so get him on that. So distract his mindset from what's causing that stress, what's building his anxiety, get him on a topic that he feels comfortable and confident talking about. Again, looking at anxiety management, for me, particularly as a school kid, I felt just playing sport. Sport for me was a great way of releasing frustration, getting rid of anger in a controlled, safe environment. Now, team sports for me really helped with my communications, Jeanette. It helped me to learn to understand, to be part of a team. It helped with my social skills. I learned a little bit about banter, although sarcasm to this day, I still can't get my head around it. Why do people say the exact opposite of what they mean? It'd be so much easier if you were just told it how it was. Do the Aspie way. But if team sports aren't really your bag, that's fine. You can look at solitary pursuits as well. So maybe cycling, running, swimming. Again, it's just trying to get rid of any of that frustration that's built up inside of you. You can look, I mean, I do cross-stitching as well. I mean, I know a bloke that can kind of sew. I know, but again, with the cross-stitching, for me, it's repetitive and it's actually therapeutic. Gardening as well, that was also a way to alleviate stress, because then you can step back and see the fruits of your labour, and you can, and it's visually stimulating gardening for me. You can step back and see what you've created. Again, I wrote a lot of lyrics as well. For me, that was just a way of expressing emotions as well. Rather than bottling things up, it's just more of a case of just getting it out on paper, get it out. So I've done various lyrics. I don't know if you would like to hear one of them before we conclude.
Oh, if you like, that'd be great.
There was, you know, I've written lyrics about, I've written drugs, alcohol, friends, relationships, my mum, my daughter. But the one that I think is really, really special, I wrote it for a psychologist. As I've said, with some therapists, they didn't really understand autism. But I was very, very fortunate when I was going through mental health difficulties. I came across someone who actually specialised in autism. And he was literally instrumental in changing my life for the better. You know, he helped to sort of curb my impulsivity. Particularly when I was quite stressed, I would just rush into a situation without thinking of the consequence or repercussion of my actions. And it was actually him, Jeanette, that got me doing public speaking. He started rolling out basic awareness training all over Worcestershire, which is just below Birmingham. And it was very well received. And then, unfortunately, he had to leave his practice. He was offered a new job down in London. And I actually wrote these lyrics for him, and I delivered them to the audience live with him there. And I think he actually shed a tear. He wasn't expecting it at all. So the lyrics that I wrote were called The Good Doctor. So sit back, relax, and I hope you enjoy these. I've witnessed the darkness, my mind whirling like an unstoppable tornado spin. Trust me, I've been on the brink of death. I wouldn't hesitate to jump straight in. You were the air that kept me alive. When I could barely breathe, I felt dead inside. I broke down in your presence, and you consoled me as I cried. You resurrected me, helped me to battle through that immense emotional pain. As the weeks passed, slowly but surely, my smile, it came back again. You've taught me a different and logical way of thinking. I now have the correct tools and strategies, so I don't wander down that lonely, destructive path of gambling and drinking. Perhaps you are not blessed with a booming voice. However, your actions truly speak louder than any words. You achieved the near impossible, a professional who has gained my admiration and total respect. God bless you, Colm. May I forever be in your debt. I thought I was born with a silver tongue. That was until I met you and heard that silky smooth Irish tone. Only took me a few months to fully understand what you were saying to us on the phone. You've given me a fresh set of eyes. I'm now able to see the world clearly. I no longer feel lost and confused. Best of luck in your new post. Please don't be a stranger. And in return, this kid shall knuckle down hard and stay clear of any potential danger. Please never forget how much change, confidence and optimism you have given to those unique people on the spectrum of autism. You shall leave a lasting legacy. Colm, you have been instrumental in helping me to rebuild my life. You are more than a mentor, more than inspirational. Most importantly of all, you're a loyal and trusted friend. Thank you.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you. And I'm sure he was really moved by that too. That's really nice and really heartfelt. Thank you.
I was just going to look at literal thinking as well. I mean, with the coping strategies, sometimes the best way to deal with it is if we have a bit of fun with ourselves. We do take things literally. And for some of the audience, I just get them to sort of get the ball rolling. So for literal interpretation, some of my classics, as it were, one of them actually happened at a police station. I just didn't go very quick because I know we're going to run out of time. And I never disclosed I had autism because I didn't accept myself and all the rest of it. And when I got arrested for the umpteenth time, I thought, well, I've got nothing to lose and maybe I've got something to gain. So for the first time I disclosed, I said, yes, I'm on the autism spectrum. And so they arranged for me to have a duty solicitor. Again, I said, look, I have autism. She said, I've heard of that. And I thought to myself, ah, fantastic. But I don't really know anything about it. So there's me, all anxious and panicky. I'm trying to explain to her what autism is, how it affects me in a synopsis.
Yeah.
And then before we went into the interview, to be interviewed by the police, she said, Alex, say no comment to the police officer's questions. Now, I thought to myself, Jeanette, okay, this woman's been in the profession 20-odd years. She must know what she's doing. So we both got into the interview room. I've sat down, and the police officer has asked me to provide my name. Now, I'm wondering, Jeanette, what do you think my response was?
Oh, you would have said no comment, and the cop would have wanted to slap you in the head.
But she looked at me in total bewilderment. How could someone as smart, articulate and eloquent as you said something like that? Well, she didn't make it abundantly clear. Now, what she should have said in that instance, Jeanette, was, okay, Alex, give your name and date of birth. Then, to all subsequent questions, then answer no comment. So that's where the business owners come from. But sometimes I literally think it can be a gift as well as a curse. But I'm focused purely on the gifts that we do have for literal thinking, because it's sometimes we just come up with some classic lines. Just to conclude, if I could just try and put this into three sentences, something. If you tell me, I'll forget. If you show me, I might remember. If you include me, I'll understand.
Absolutely. Now, if people want to book you as a speaker, how can they get in touch? And I can put any web details or anything on the promo page for this show as well.
Okay, sure. I am on Google, so if you just type in Alex Evans Autism, my web address is Optimism in Autism. So please be mindful of the spelling, because I know it is a bit of a swine, but it is optimisminautism.co.uk. And I have my website that will tell you all about me, a video of me presenting to the National Autistic Society, and just basically what I do for a living.
Thank you, Alex. Once again, I've really enjoyed interviewing you. I've had a great conversation. Thank you for coming on the show. Might have to have you again next year.
Yeah, that would be absolutely wonderful, Jeanette. Again, thank you for the opportunity, and I hope you and your listeners enjoy that presentation.
Oh, I'm sure. I know I did, so I'm sure we all will. Thank you, Alex. Goodbye.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.